What has happened to America? We've had the good sense to create lovely parks, but we're afraid to use them after dark. We build libraries and galleries to hold the world's greatest treasury of art, and we permit the world's greatest collection of smut to be freely available everywhere. The highest echelons of government are embroiled in scandals that are cynically swept under the rug.
National morality, by example, and by persuasion, should begin at the White House and have the good influence to reach out to every corner of the land. This is not the case today because our country has lacked leadership that treats public office as a public trust. I pledge that Bill Miller and I will restore to America a dedication to principle and to conscience among its public servants.
In your heart, you know he's right. Vote for Barry Goldwater.
The program originally scheduled at this time will not be broadcast. The following pre-recorded political program is sponsored by Women Voters for Goldwater Miller, the Women's Division of the Republican National Committee, the National Federation of Republican Women, and the Women's Division of Citizens for Goldwater Miller. Here in our Washington studios today with Senator Barry Goldwater are six women from all over the United States. Mrs. Zale Woodford Schroeder, international corporate lawyer whose office is in Detroit. She has taught international and corporate law at a university and for many years has been an active member of the Business and Professional Women's Association. Mrs. Edward Burke, New York housewife, mother of three children, vitally interested in her local schools. Mrs. Leo Agostini from Redding, California. She's been married for 13 years. Her husband is an engineer with the Pacific Telephone Company. Mrs. Charles Ranges now lives in St. Petersburg, Florida, a widow, formerly a concert singer and music teacher. Her great interest is in church work. Mrs. Edwin Shank of Winnemac, Indiana, is the widow of Captain Shank, who died recently in the war in Vietnam. Her four children range in age from 8 months to 5 years. Senator Margaret Chase Smith of Maine.
To all of you ladies gathered across the length and breadth of our country, I want to say a very cordial hello and thank you for gathering as you have. I have with me here in the studio today six very lovely ladies whose purpose is to ask me questions. And first, I'd like to introduce an old friend of mine, a colleague of mine in the United States Senate, Senator Margaret Chase Smith.
Thank you for including me. This is a very good opportunity for us to discuss issues and clear up some of them. You know, ladies, Senator Goldwater and I have been associated in defense matters for a long time. We've served on the Armed Services Committee, sat side by side on the Preparedness Investigating Committee. So I've known his great interest in our national security for a good many years. Perhaps that's what I know best about him. We're all hoping and wishing for peace so very, very much. And you know, Barry, it was just 10 years ago, this very month, that I was at 10 Downing Street. Had a long talk with Winston Churchill, and his whole theme was peace through strength, and how he emphasized that respect was much more important than affection, that weakness invited attack.
Well, that's very interesting because I can remember before the war, the Second War, that Winston Churchill was called an extremist because he advocated that England strengthen its arms to prevent war. And we've certainly found out in that committee that the way to preserve peace is through strength. And I'm certainly glad you reminded me of Mr. Churchill's remarks.
Well, it's very important, and I think people generally agree that defenses are important. Don't you think so?
Senator Goldwater, this morning before I came to brunch, I was sort of reviewing some of the years of my life, which I prefer not to state how many. However, I have observed in my corporation law practice and working with women and women's organizations the superb contributions they've made to their communities and to our nation. In fact, everything fine in our country, women have made a contribution to, either behind the scenes or out in front. Before I ask my question, I'd like to repeat something that has been said, which is this. that when the director of the symphony goes to the podium to direct, it isn't important except what he does is important, but what he says is of no importance. But if he directs it well, and the score is performed well, the audience is not concerned whether he's a man or a woman. And so my question on that premise is posed in this way. To what degree do you value the contribution and the judgment of women, shall I say, within the home, in their communities, in policy-making positions, and also in politics?
Well, Mrs. Schroeder, I think we have the finest example of what a woman can do in the policy-making fields and in politics with us today. I've served with Margaret Chase Smith for the last 12 years in the United States Senate, and I can think of no senator who is more effective than she is. Now, why is that? Mostly because a woman has a keener insight. She's interested in peace because she's a housewife, a mother, she's close to it. She's interested in balanced budgets because she knows what it is to balance her own family budget. I served with another woman, Margaret Kober, on the City Council of Phoenix. And I always remember when it came around to budget-making time, we men would always say, Margaret, is this good or is this bad? As I say, there are reasons for this. The woman generally is more informed, believe it or not, better informed about domestic and world affairs than her husband. Her husband is too busy making money. He's too busy talking with the boys. While the woman will watch television, she'll listen to radio during the day, and she will read. And I have the highest regard for women in all walks of life, and I respect their judgment. Oh, I could go on and on this. I had women in my squadron when we were ferrying airplanes in World War II. And I remember they said that a woman couldn't fly instruments. Well, we put them in the instrument school, and they did better in most cases than the men. I'm pretty close to this subject because in my own business, about 95% of the people that I've worked with have been women. So I know probably a little more about their abilities than the average man because I've been exposed.
This pleases us very much.
Thank you.
Well, Senator Goldwater, we all know as parents how you feel on the school problem, not only in New York City, but throughout the country in regard to involuntary transfers of children, whether it be walking or riding a bus. I feel very, very strongly on this issue since I am a mother of three. And in my particular community in New York, there is one pairing. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but we have a pairing situation in New York where they divide the schools completely in half, K through three in one school and four, five, and six in another school. And on one side of a main thoroughfare, 21st Street, which has the Triborough Bridge on one end and the 59th Street Bridge on the other end, and they're both heavy trafficked. And these little children are crossing this street to go to school. And what I would like to know is who gives the government the right to tell us as parents what's good for our children when you move into a neighborhood to be near the school, to put your child into the school so that you more or less have a say-so about what goes on. And I feel very deeply about this, and I was wondering if anything could be done to correct this terrible, terrible situation.
Well, I think that if you women in the cities where this is being practiced keep up your constant demands at a bee stop, that you can accomplish this, because the Constitution is on your side. There's this right of association. Now, every right has two sides. You have the right of association or the right not to associate. In the instance of busing, I believe that we are violating the right of association both ways, but we're also doing something else. we are having integration by compulsion. Now, this is just as wrong as segregation by compulsion. And I think that as we get this into the courts, that the courts will have to recognize the validity of the Constitution in this and recognize that you property owners, you homeowners, regardless of your race, creed, or color, have a right to demand that your child go to school in the neighborhood that you probably moved to because of the school. You can carry this through to its ridiculous end. We can have compulsory integration in neighborhoods. We can have compulsory integration in businesses where we say, you have to move here and you have to move there. To me, it's completely wrong. I'm opposed unalterably to segregation, but I don't want to see us get in the same kind of trouble by having compulsory integration. I don't think it's going to accomplish its end, and I just hope that you women keep up the fight that you're putting up.
My husband and I are even more concerned about the high cost of living and the rising inflation in this country. Out in California, where we live, not only do we pay the usual high income tax, federal income tax, but we pay a high state income tax, and our local taxes are very high. Quite frankly, we find it almost impossible to put aside any money toward our children's education or our own retirement. Just for an example, every time I go to the grocery store, it seems that I get fewer purchases for my money than the last time I shopped.
Well, of course, we Republicans and many Democrats, I might say, have been talking about the dangers of fiscal irresponsibility for a long, long time. We cannot continue to spend money that we don't have forever. Now, this administration, for example, has spent $27 billion more than it's taken in. I feel we've been very lucky that we haven't had a real financial disaster so far, but we're headed for it if we keep it up. This is one of the things that bothers me about people who've retired. In my brothers and my business, we've had a retirement plan for years. People who retired 20 years ago are now having difficulty living on the income because the dollar depreciates. And it's this depreciating dollar that worries the countries who own our gold paper. And it's the reason that they're calling this paper in, because they fear that the dollar might decrease to nothing. Your question is, what can we do about it? I'm convinced that the budget can be balanced in times of peace, particularly in times of plenty, as we're living in now. And I've advocated that we set in an automatic tax reduction of 5% a year for 5 years. Well, the critics say this can't be done because we can't tell about future income. It can always be changed, but we can talk about and tell about future income to that extent. We have to get the budget balanced. We have to cut the cost of government where we can. It can't be done overnight, but it can be done without hurting our defense spending at all. We, all of us in the Congress, see waste. We see places that the budget can be balanced. I think, for example, the fact in agriculture, where the department has added over 10,000 people in the last 4 years. At the same time, the farm population has decreased 2 million and about 400,000 farms. This is just an example of where we have waste in our government. And I think it's one of the most important things that faces the president is to see to it that we stop this increase in the cost of living, because it can get very violent. And I'm afraid that we have all the things built into our system right now for a giant increase in inflation in the next within the next year or 18 months.
I think the idea of inflation is affecting all the people in Florida. Of course, I come from St. Petersburg, and there are many, many people retired there and living on pensions that are small. They're supplemented by Social Security, but a lot of them are receiving Social Security that's small. It wasn't as much as it is now, of course, in the beginning. And those people are frightened. They're scared to death, some of them. I've been stopped down the street, and they said, Mrs. Rangers, what's going to happen if Social Security is going to be taken away? But I said, it isn't going to be taken away. And I said, well, what about this Mr. Goldwater? Is he going to do anything for us? I said, have you read anything about him at all? Because in my own case, I'm fortunate. I have my home, and my husband has given me a very lovely home, and I can keep going, but this is Social Security does help. Naturally, it does with all the little incidentals, but I'm stopped on the street, and I'm stopped in church. They stop at headquarters, and I said, trust Mr. Goldwater. Trust the senator. Now, Senator Goldwater, will you do something to reassure these people? Can you tell them something that they'll hold on to?
Well, I'll be very glad to, and also I'm happy again that Margaret Chase Smith is here because she and I have worked together in this field. During my 12 years in the United States Senate, I have voted for every improvement in the Social Security Act. I have voted against those amendments that I thought would be detrimental, which would have been detrimental to the Social Security. Now, this year, the Senate and the House both voted nice increases for the recipients of Social Security. We added a great many people who have not been covered, and I voted for these things. Now, the real enemy in my mind of Social Security is the man who didn't allow this bill to become the law, and that's the President of the United States, who wanted his way, and he didn't get it, so he just said to the conferees, stop everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those people on Social Security or who are receiving Social Security will not receive these improved benefits this year. And it's not Goldwater's fault. It's Johnson's fault.
But I know. But, I mean, there are a lot of people who don't read enough, and they just don't go into the subject deeply enough.
Well, I hope they see this
show this morning. I hope they do, too.
May I interrupt right
there?
Please. You've been so misrepresented on this Social Security matter that I had your record checked. And I brought it with me. And I'm just going to take, if I may, just a minute to read just a bit of this. This goes back, not today, and it's not what he's saying he did or is going to do, but it's what I've heard him vote. And that is the permanent record. And one of them was back in 1955 when he voted for the Railroad Retirement Act and says yes on the Barry Goldwater. 1956, to make Social Security benefits available to women at age 62 instead of 65. And that was agreed to, and he voted yes. In 1956, again, to provide disability insurance benefits for certain disabled individuals who have attained age 50. To reduce to age 62 the age on the basis of which benefits are payable to certain women, to provide for continuation of child's insurance benefits for children who are disabled before attaining age 18, to extend coverage, and Barry Goldwater says yes. In 1958, to increase benefits under the federal old age survivors and so forth, and again he voted yes. And I could go on with some more, but I think that's enough and far enough back to show what the
actual
record was.
Well, I think that's what they need, Senator. I think they need to know that there is help coming, just to hold on to something.
When I'm president, I want to see the recipient of Social Security get a dollar somewhat like the dollar that he or she put in.
Well, Barry, I think your earnestness in this is shown very clearly in the retirement plan which you set up in your own business.
Oh, yes.
I have read that with a very great deal of interest in.
Well, thank you very much.
Can I say something here? Yes. I'm very glad to have this cleared up because in our area, all we hear is, oh, Barry Goldwater, he doesn't want Social Security at all. You know?
Well,
this
I might just add this, that this is a creature of the Congress. And the president just can't willy-nilly do away with it. Any law that the Congress passes, it's the duty of the president to administer.
These issues are all very important, but I have something of grave importance that I would like to talk to you and everyone about. I'm fighting for a principle, and I know I'm not alone in this struggle. I have received a number of letters from many Americans who feel the same as I do about this. My husband's letters were published because he had a message for the American people, no matter what political party they may belong to. That a country such as ours could send American pilots into combat in airplanes that fall apart is something he could not understand. He's a dedicated officer, a wonderful man, and he loved his country. To further emphasize the comments I've made, I'd like to read you portions of my husband's letters. These were both written in January. This is January 7th, 1964. Lost two guys today. One was a pretty good friend of mine, name of Major Adams. We called him Seth Adams, the wagon master, after the guy on TV. The only guess is the airplane just came apart. B-26, third or fourth that have done that now. Letter dated January 20th, 1964. I am over here to do the best job possible for my country, yet my country will do nothing for me or any of my buddies or even for itself. I love America. I have seen almost every major country in the world except Russia and Red China. My country is the best, but it is soft and has no guts about it at all. I am sure nothing will be done over here until after the elections. Why? Because votes are more important than my life or any of my buddies' lives. What gets me the most is they won't tell you people what we are doing over here. Mr. Goldwater, I would like to ask you why the American people are not able to be told the truth about the situation in Vietnam. A number of times on television, I have heard that our country has the greatest arsenal of weapons in the history of the world. Then I would like to know why my husband and others died in airplanes that fell apart.
Well, Miss Shank, first I want to tell you that the courage you displayed in allowing your husband's letters to be published has done more to correct this situation, which isn't corrected yet, than anything that any of us could have done in the Congress. It's a delicate thing to talk about with you, I know, because I know of your great love for your husband. But you ask the question, we're at war in South Vietnam, and the administration will not call it such. They say that we're down there to administer and to instruct. Well, now you know through your husband's letters that our boys have been pulling triggers, they're firing back, and they're getting killed. The other day, the Defense Department released the fact that they'd had 900 casualties. Also released but not talked about is the fact that the military services have awarded 17,000 decorations in South Vietnam. Now, you don't get those decorations like the Silver Star and the Distinguished Flying Cross and the Air Force Medal for instructing. Now, why they're keeping it secret, I'm convinced, is political, because we are not winning that war. I don't say that there's any pat solution to it. I think it's a dreadful war, and it's going to be a long war. But first, I think the president should level with the American people. Tell the American people what's going on down there and quit trying to kid us. Now about the old equipment. I've flown the B-26. It was a World War II airplane. It's a good airplane. It was a good airplane. But an airplane like a human body, if you put it through enough stress, gradually the metal gets fatigued, and sooner or later it's going to come apart, particularly these old ones. Now, the truth of the matter is that we have not produced a new airplane for the type of work that we're doing in South Vietnam since World War II. We're actually 20 years without any modern equipment. And we can't use our high-speed jets in this work over there, tactical support. It has to be a relatively slow airplane, but we should have had new ones. Now, since the B-26s have been coming apart, and the old T-28, which is a trainer made over into a tactical support plane, they're taking Navy planes out of storage 35 miles west of my hometown of Phoenix, that have been standing out on that desert for some of them 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. They were good airplanes when they were built. No question about it. But they're old. Now, I have condemned the Secretary of Defense time after time after time for not having developed any new weapons, strategical weapons particularly, for our armed services. And this is still the case. We don't have an airplane on the drawing boards to take care of this problem. He stopped the manufacture of bombers. He wants to rely only on missiles. Now, missiles are not going to win a war like we have in South Vietnam because we're not going to use them. So I think it gets down, frankly, to a dangerous philosophy in the Defense Department that we can rely completely now on automatic gadgets or automatic weapons, and we don't have to rely on men. We are not going to win wars without men. A man has to be in that airplane. A man has to march on the ground. A man has to serve on the sea. The Marines have to do both. There's no way to replace them. And I think it is nothing short of criminal. The fact, one, that the president will not tell the truth to the American people about South Vietnam, and two, that his Secretary of Defense absolutely refuses to face up to the problem of new weapons down there.
They really should have the best. They're fighting and dying for every American.
We have tens of thousands of young men down there who are fighting. They're not instructing. They are fighting, and they were told to fight. And when we're in war, I think every American would agree that only the best should comprise the weaponry of our armed services, regardless of what branch it is.
And I believe if the people knew, I received so many letters, people didn't actually realize that this was going on in Vietnam, that we even had men there.
Well, again, I've begged the president to level with the American people. I have never in my life, and I've lived through three wars in this century, and we're in the fourth one now, I've never known a time when the American president went to the American people and told them the truth that the American people didn't solidify behind him and said, whatever you have to do, Mr. President, do it, but let's get the thing won.
If they know why, the American people are great people in emergency. If they know what the sacrifices are for, there's no question what they'll do. But if they can't know the truth, and we who sit on those committees have a difficult time enough.
You know what we've heard on those committees, Margaret. We don't dare talk about it, but it would curl your hair to hear what some of these young boys have had to put up with. Well, ladies, I certainly want to thank all of you for being with us today. I know that the people out across America have enjoyed this. The value of women in politics cannot be estimated. I've seen across this nation of ours in the last 11 months a growing tide of interest amongst the women. And of course, candidates like this, but there will be more women vote this time than there will be men. There are more women working at the grassroots than there are men. And I think, frankly, the men ought to be ashamed of themselves in this country. They seem to be only interested in their business, their club, gin rummy, a little golf now and then. I think they should spend some of that time worrying about the situation that we find ourselves in America, and that America finds herself in around the world. So, again, my thanks to you for the dedicated work that you're doing in your communities and in your states. And with your help and the help of women all over this country, I'm sure that Bill Miller and I are going to be elected president and vice president. And I can promise you this, that from the day I first walk in that White House until the day I walk out of it for the last time, I'll level with you. I'll be honest with you. And from this president, you'll know what's going on in your government. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've just heard Senator Barry Goldwater's views on some of the problems of vital concern to every American. This program was made possible by the contributions of women in every walk of life from every part of our country. The campaign for the presidency of the United States is now in the home stretch. It is most important that Senator Barry Goldwater's stand on the issues of the campaign be presented to all voters. But programs like this cost a great deal of money. If you believe that Barry Goldwater should be heard, won't you please do your part? Send your contributions to Women Voters for Goldwater Miller, Box 1964, Washington, D.C. Let me repeat that. Send your contribution, whatever you can afford, to Women Voters for Goldwater Miller, Box 1964, Washington, D.C. And do it now, before you forget.